You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
Bradfo Show. That's my open. That's what they used to call me, Swivel Hit Bradford. That's my open. I'm waiting for you to justify your stupid opinion. Bradfo Show.
That's delicious. I didn't want to do this, but I was forced to. I have to do 4 podcasts a week because the public demanded it. It was hugely, hugely popular. Hugely popular last week, last couple weeks. We've never had more momentum on the Bradfo Show. So we're going to continue to do it because people want the baseball conversation in all different forms and fashion. Last year, I just wanted first, before we start episode 78, I do want to thank all the guests from last week. Kerosene Ken, John Smoltz, Sam Kennedy, and Ashley Kelly, wife of Joe Kelly. Thank you all for making it such a great week, and it's going to be another great week because my good friend Evan Drellick's here sitting with me, the only person, up until the Lou Maloney podcast was blown up, the only person to actually participate in this podcast and then not have it air. Welcome.
Well, it was your screw-up. Thank you for having me.
Well, it wasn't, actually. I've screwed up before on this podcast, the sound, Lou. Absolutely, my screw up. The JD Martinez Welcome to Boston Party podcast had a heart attack. I apologize. Didn't post it. But that one, the Evan Drellick one, was absolutely not my fault.
How many microphones do you use now when you do these podcasts, Rob?
Depends. If I'm out on the field.
Two?
Depends. Yeah.
You had a back and forth podcast with me. And made the mistake of bringing one microphone to the table. And the audio was therefore unlistenable, and that's your fault, not mine. It is your podcast. Ken Laird is doing something right now.
Do we have to start over, Ken?
No, you're fine.
Okay.
You're a little hot. You can see you're a little hot.
I know. I'm hot.
It's almost like Rob doesn't know what he's doing, huh?
Well, see, if you're going to be part of this, this is a very welcoming place.
Take me for who I am. All right?
All right. So Evan Drellick, Kerosene Ken, all with us. Kerosene Ken can only do a little snippet, so we're going to get to his hot take out of the gate as soon as we can. But the topic, and because really when you start out this well for a team, we've talked about what has gone right and all corners of the roster and core and blah, blah, blah. We've talked about it. We have to at some point have the uncomfortable discussion of where it can all go wrong because we have plenty of examples of teams that start out very, very well and then don't do well. The Milwaukee Brewers, the 1987 Milwaukee Brewers. Yeah, sure, there are teams like Detroit Tigers in 1984. But there are plenty of other examples where you have great Aprils and then it sorely falls apart. I sat here. This is the best team that I've seen in a long, long time for the Red Sox. It is the best constructed team as we sit here in April. Better than the team that was proclaimed the best team ever in 2011, which might have, by the way, Evan, been the best team. 2011, that was your first year covering this team, right?
Yes.
That actually might have been the best team then, beyond the 2013 team. Much more talented team.
Talking about talent.
Yeah.
So the only thing, as we start off here, the team is doing so well right now. There's no hesitation on your part for how this will be received, that we're being the negative Nancys by criticizing doing so well.
I think, Evan, because
I've got this narrative around me that all I am is negative. Well, and now the first time you asked me on this podcast is that I'm being asked to poke holes in this incredible, the best start ever for a rookie manager. And that's what you're bringing
I've been asked to do this.
I want that
as
clear.
As long as they're educated takes, as long as they're...
Well, they're always educated.
No, but they're not. That's the problem. It becomes, when you do it, it becomes too obvious that you're trying to go down the road. It doesn't make any sense.
That's not true.
Okay, well, we'll discuss that, but I'm not saying that we have to be negative here, but we've gone through the gamut of how many things have been positive. What else are you going to talk about? If we did it, oh my goodness, the starting pitching's been so good. The lineup's been so good. Cora has made all the right decisions. We have to brace ourselves to the thing that hasn't been discussed. And Kerosene as I like to call him. Yeah. I mean, you would agree with me that this has to be the conversation right now, right?
I think, but my microphone's way low, so I'm going to fix this.
Okay.
This is going great, huh? Well, let the people in. Good? Let the people see what's going on here.
All right. Check, 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 check. Just turned around.
Rob, well, you can start us off and tell us what you think will go wrong.
All right, are you ready for the kerosene take?
Oh, yeah, hold on. All right, ready? So the topic is what can go wrong. This is very disconcerting. Is it working now?
Check, check, check. Okay, better. Better. Okay.
What can go wrong? What can go wrong with this team? And I'm not saying it is going to go wrong, Evan, just to make sure that you don't want people mad at you, Evan.
No, I don't. I'm sick of being yelled at.
Okay.
By everybody.
But
Ken? Kirk? Players? Management? PR?
He's trying to get back.
Sensitive.
Everybody.
Yeah, it's very sensitive.
Here's what can go wrong, Rob.
Okay. Thank you, Karis.
If you really study what's going on with Chris Sale right now, he's not elite Chris Sale. Something is wrong with Chris Sale. There's the kerosene take of the day. Got all totally lost in the Sean Manaea no-hitter on Saturday night. Check out his velocity on his fastball. Down a tick. I understand the game at Fenway, he pitched in the cold. You kind of throw that game out. He toughed it out.
Yeah, his velocity actually wasn't down yesterday.
It was.
For the game in Oakland.
Where did he top out? 94?
96.
96 for a pitch. But I think he sat 91, 92 for a lot of the game. And look at the numbers, his fastball and his changeup. He doesn't throw the changeup a ton, but he's getting hit. Those pitches have not been as effective as the Chris Sale that we knew. Slider is still effective. He's got to mix it in when he can. Something worries me about Sale. And this has been a guy that's been remarkably healthy through his career. But that kind of workload that he's had, including last year, and I believe behind the scenes they were a little bit worried about this coming into the year, which led into the whole we're going to monitor his pitch count. Even the first start, Evan, it was a little bizarre to see him come out of the game that early. There's something medically they're worried about, and now we're just this guy's elite. You're seeing the downtick just a little bit. He wasn't terrible. That's what can go wrong with the Boston Red Sox. Something wrong with Chris Sale's arm.
Well, when you watch Craig Kimbrell so far, and I think the Red Sox stats that fine Twitter account showed the other day, the velocity hasn't been there for him quite as much yet. He's still been dominant. And even if you look at David Price, is the curveball really there? He's been more sinker cutter. Maybe these guys are all evolving at this point. At some point, Chris Sale's going to have to adjust without his velocity. I'm not convinced right now that he doesn't have it. But you're right. If that keeps up, then you have a different guy. And the guy who doesn't have to look at scouting reports, who can rely on Sandy Leon or Christian Vasquez to call all his pitches, you might need to see that change. I just didn't think it would have to come this early. But I don't know, Rob, you think he's at that point? You have evidence of that?
No, I think he wasn't. What you're juxtaposing is against what he was coming out of the gate last year, right?
And really the whole season last year. I mean, take the last month
from
out of
August, 2 months. I mean, okay. August 1st on,
fair.
He was at a 4.5 ERA.
Yes.
So,
but that's the guy they want the whole year and into the postseason.
Yes.
Right?
So, he has an ERA under 2 right now.
I'm not saying he's been bad.
No, I know.
It's comparison to Sale's standard.
I don't think it's realistic that he's going to be what he was out of the gate last year. I think that was, if he's going to be what he was out of the gate last year, they're trying to make that at the end of the year instead of the beginning of the year. But it's right. I don't blame you for bringing it up, Kerosene. But here's the thing: is that we're juxtaposing it off of last year, and I think what he is giving you, even on the game against Manaea, it was good enough. My biggest point, it leads to kind of what Evan was talking about with David Price and with Sale. I don't think there's any argument. I mean, the biggest thing that can go wrong with this team is that something happens to those two guys.
So I just quick note on this. I was in Anaheim, unlike Rob Bradford. It was a good, investment.
How much time did you talk about his stories?
Good investment. Well, the Mookie Betts story was good. It wasn't really talk, but it was a good feature. And you should.
What was it on?
It was on his swing. And how he works on his swing. And J.D. Martinez.
What is going on, Ken?
What did you want? Controversy in the middle of 16?
No, I wanted a story that people
read. Anyway, I sat down with Dana Lavangi.
Bradfield brought the hammer with Betts versus Trout. That was the story of the week. But go ahead.
How many times have you read that? I know. That's the laziest story. It's boring. If you actually read my story.
It was topical. It's what people were talking about. Bradford's Betts got his finger
on
the pulse.
Betts and Trout is 3 years old.
Ken, honestly. I mean, I have to stop real quick here. Not stop the podcast, but stop like Evan from talking. Because, Evan, this is the problem. You got to get your head around this. You talk about, you went out to Anaheim to talk to Mookie Betts about his swing, whereas the real topic is what Ken just said.
You should have talked to Trout about Betts.
I've asked Trout about Betts before. Do what Tomasi did. He talked to Ron Reneke, who was Trout's outfield coach last year.
How many bench coaches do you need talking about Trout and Betts?
Find a different way to...
You've had DeSarcina do it?
What was
you and I see differently.
Go to Anaheim to talk about Mookie Betts' swing? Like, you couldn't do that here any day.
Are
you worried that what they're doing over there?
The story was well read.
What's going on?
The story was very well read. Because it was a good, insightful story. JD Martinez saying that Mookie Betts does a lot of things differently than most hitters.
You know what another thing?
You heard that from Mike Trout?
You know what another thing Everett does? He gets desperate with his stories, so he retweets them like 50,000 times.
I want people to read me, yes. but can I just tell you, I sat down with Dana Lavangi.
You paid money.
Shut up for a second.
Exclusive Lavangi sit.
I sat down with Lavangi, and this velocity issue came up. And
I talked to him in Boston. I didn't need to go out to Anaheim.
Okay, well.
This is old news.
What, did you sit down with him for 20 minutes?
Yes.
The velocity, with who?
It came up with Sale, and he actually mentioned Kimbrell. It did not come up.
Yes, I've already talked to Lavangi. This is old news.
Mookie Betts and Mike Trout might be similar? That's not old news?
What did Lavangi
think?
He's worried about it?
No, he's not. And I guess that's what you'd expect him to say, but they do feel like it's part of this build-up program. If you'd like to know the average fastball velocity of Chris Sale to begin the season through five starts, 94 in his first one, 92.99 second, 93.91, 90.82.
That was the cold weather game.
That was the cold weather, 95.67 yesterday.
Okay. What was it last? What was it?
The homer was on a 91.
What was it in Oakland?
The average four-seamer he threw was 95.67. Yeah, so it would suggest he's on his way back.
Keep an eye on it.
Keep an eye.
Yeah, I will. I mean, as all your hot takes, I always keep an eye on it. Like Kale, I mean.
I got to go, but here's my second addendum.
Okay.
Now, you reported that Pedroia was going to start the year.
No, I did not. He said that.
Okay, well,
I don't put words in their mouth.
But.
What did you report?
That Pedroia was going to start opening day.
No, Pedroia said he was going to start an opening day.
You remember that was.
That was a very useful conversation.
I mean, that's been severely wrong and overblown.
I think that was like him being like this bravado.
But when he comes back, that's still a major issue that this team has to deal with. How to reincorporate Pedroia into the lineup. You don't think so?
No.
Nunez getting sent to the bench?
Have you seen Nunez play?
Defensively, he's not good.
That's why you're on this train. You're already setting up Pedroia.
That's true.
That makes so much sense now.
I have to have Dustin Pedroia playing. And if Eduardo Nunez is in the way, then I am not going to settle for that.
You're then going to have Swihart and Nunez on the bench upset.
We said this on the radio just now, Ken. I said, from what I've seen from Nunez, I love watching Nunez play offensively. But what I've seen from him, I almost think Blake Swihart could play better at second base.
You're wrong about that.
Well, whatever. I mean, it's your prerogative to be wrong about me being wrong. But Eduardo Nunez was baffling to me. Like, I watched him in spring training, and he clearly had mobility issues. He can't catch the ball. He has a hard time catching the ball. He had a moment on Friday night's game where he was perfectly placed in the shift. Brian Johnson was pitching. The ball's right there, and he botches it. He had an instance on Saturday night where Cindy Leon throws it down a second. He doesn't want his knees getting blown up, but not only that, but he drops the ball. And it's weird to me because I can get the mobility thing, but just being able to feel the ball, I don't get that. But
how mobile will Pedroia be when he comes back? And if he doesn't hit right away, that's going to amp up the pressure even more.
What's interesting is you talk about him saying, I'm coming back for opening day. One thing we've learned early on, and I think Bogaerts is another example of this, they are going to take as long as they need to. There is not going to be, we've seen it in the last few years. Well, we were going to be careful, but are you really going to be careful? Last few years, really, I go back to Pedroia's foot injury way back in the day. They sent him out in Pawtucket, and the next thing you know, he's stealing bases, and he can't get out of bed the next day.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
All right, okay, but I got to go. But those are my two things.
That was good. You contributed well.
It's not quite Kale deliverance like last week, but
no,
I tried.
The Kale can be researched.
Your reliance on Pedroia to self-assess and say, I'm ready or I'm not ready, is potentially misplaced. Is he going to say to them?
Well, that was in the offseason, Evan. I mean, that was before spring training.
No, but I'm saying now. You talk about they're not going to rush anybody. The guy's going to rush himself is Pedroia.
I don't think they will let him.
Here, it all depends on one. It all depends on Pedroia. If Pedroia is anything like his old self, then it's going to work itself out. The issue is going to be if he comes back and he's not playing well, and Nunez is performing like he is now, which is well offensively, do you rather have the glove of Pedroia out there, assuming the glove is still there? Because it's not that he's going to lose the ability to catch the ball. We don't know what his range is. We don't know what his bat is. Pedroia is an unknown right now, and anybody who looks at it differently is tricking themselves to knowing what this injury is going to turn him into.
I think that normally I would agree with you that if you could say, well, Nunez is certainly offensively, he's a good player, and he could be a replacement for Pedroia if Pedroia isn't ready to go, if he's not the old Pedroia. But Nunez has been so bad defensively, and it's weird because they've had good infield defense. And I do think it factors in where he hasn't had to move a whole lot. But I think this is, we talk about things that are going to catch up to this team, and you've said it before, and I agree with you. Like, I don't know why they're not having a defensive replacement for Nunez.
For health reasons as well. Look, when Pedroia comes back, I don't think he's going to come back and be playing every single game. You're not going to see the disappearance of Eduardo Nunez either way. You're not going to see Pedroia take over every day. Now, if this lead in the division is still very high, and the Blue Jays are certainly still in this thing, if it's high enough that you can afford to break Pedroia in, maybe you can take some bad play from Pedroia for a little bit. The trickier thing is going to be you're in the middle of a pennant race. You're playing the Yankees, and if Pedroia's mobility is limited, if he's not hitting, who are you turning to? And that's going to be, I don't know what Alex Cora does. That's a tougher scenario. But Pedroia is a huge what if. All of it. All of it's a...
Yeah, well, that leads us to the whole what can go wrong with this team.
Well, I'll give you one that's more present.
Okay.
At a certain point, J.D. Martinez is going to screw up in left field. And it's going to really cost him. It hasn't cost him yet. And then we're going to have the discussion of how valuable is this player rest for these smaller guys?
I think he's played, he DH, so I think he's played 9 out of 19 games as we record this. Almost 50% of the time he's playing the field.
It's a lot.
I mean, nobody ever thought if you got to game 21, 22, and he was playing the outfield 50% of the time, nobody would have thought
Cora is taking this rest idea, which is a good one, farther than I guess most people believe. When he initially said we're going to rotate people, I don't know if everybody quite latched on to how much that meant because we're so used to the other style of play and lineup construction. So the idea is good, but he's been relatively free from criticism. I've been one of the few to suggest.
Cora?
Yeah.
Out 17-2.
Right, there's going to be a day when Martinez is out of the lineup because you're working in Moreland, who's playing very well. So right now it's certainly defensible.
He's the best OPS of any first baseman
exactly.
in baseball.
Exactly. Do you think that continues? Maybe no. It does. Maybe we need to... There could be discussion about do we need to think about Mitch Moreland in an entirely different light. If we still think of him as a glove-first guy, which is probably inaccurate at this point, there's going to be a day when they're not going to be hitting, and you're going to see Martinez on the bench, and you're going to go, why isn't J.D. Martinez playing? And the other question is going to exist. He's going to be in left field, and you're going to be like, wait, why is he in left field? They're going to lose the game because of a ball he couldn't get to. So those questions exist right now. They just haven't been exploited.
The day that Bogarts got hurt, April 8th, that's when it was really exploited, the J.D. Martinez thing, because he butchered that ball in Fenway Park. And I think that he's going to have much, much more difficult time and have many more moments, or you're talking about at Fenway Park, than he is on the road. So we're going to have more of those. Undoubtedly. Like, I watched him play, Evan, in spring training. Hold on a second. I watched him play in spring training, J.D. Martinez in the outfield. And I think that he can field the position. He has pretty good instincts. He throws to the right base. He is what he is. He's not very mobile, but I've seen worse. I've seen a lot worse out there. But to your point, is it going to cost them at a key moment? If we're sitting here in August, we had put like 45, 50 games in the field. That's not how it's trending right now.
So that's the question. Do you think Alex Cora is going to overplay him in the outfield? Does Cora need to reel this in a little bit? And I'm sure there's an element. I know there is an element of J.D. Martinez came here with the understanding that he would play roughly 50 games in the outfield or whatever. Whatever the number, whether specified or not, he wanted to play outfield. The Red Sox told him, yeah, you're going to be able to play some outfield. So how far do you take that? At what point is it detrimental to the team?
I think it all relies on how the other guys we mentioned are doing, how Hanley's doing, how Mitch Moreland's doing, how if one of the outfielders are in a slump. And we don't know how that's going to play out. So far, everybody's hitting pretty much.
But the other thing is, do you need to keep running JD out there to keep Mookie fresh? How much rest? So we all, I think, are in agreement that it's good to have more rest. How much? How do you choose? How do you know? Is it 20 games for one of these guys?
Well,
is it 15?
Well, there's no blueprint right now. How we know that is because he's resting guys after they hit home runs. You know, so there isn't like
because he's drawing up the lineup days ahead of time.
Sure, but still, I know that, and he said that, but managers have done that and then deviated because the guy's gotten hot, but they're sticking to it, and it hasn't really come back to bite them because they come back and usually they hit. It's, I guess, what we have to look at as the season goes on, and we have this conversation about what could go wrong, is which one of these guys is going to start going down. Start slumping. Because all of them, am I right? I mean, all of them right now make a case they're having good years. Even like Jackie Bradley, Andrew Benintendi, their numbers aren't way up there, but they're playing well enough. They're contributing. It's not like you said, oh, that guy has to be out of the lineup. So which one of these guys, Moreland, Hanley, you know, I'm taking Betts out of the equation, Benintendi, Bradley, which one of these guys is going to have a downturn where you're like, oh, well, you know what? You're going to be sitting more than you like.
It almost doesn't matter which one it is. It's a question of, does he then react to that? The whole thing with the lineup right now is he's not playing the hot hand. And the hot hand has been one of those ideas that has been long railed against by the nerds, the sabermetricians and all that type of stuff. Like, I remember tweeting something out recently about Cora and the lineup, and Bill James retweeted something to the effect of, thank God, like it's about time that people are getting away from this idea. The way I look at the hot hand is, if there's a guy you look at who's just in a total funk and there's something tangible about it, where there's no hard contact and he's just lost the plate and he's not a Giancarlo Stanton type of player, then I think you have a real argument to play somebody else for a bit and give a guy a breather. It's when you have somebody who's not in this very obvious slump that you take out of the lineup. And do you believe in the hot hand, Rob? Do you think this is...
Yeah, I believe in the hot hand. Yeah, I believe if you're swinging the bat well, a lot of times, the problem with the hot hand is it's going to end. It ends at some point, and then you have to identify when it's ending.
Does the hot hand outweigh the matchup? Let's say you're a really good fastball hitter.
Yes, it does.
You think if you had a 3-for-4 day yesterday, but this guy in
because
the mound.
I think sometimes, absolutely. I mean, and no one can tell me differently, because whether having played or seen guys played or whatever, it's athletics. When you feel good about this, and this is what everyone is trying to harness, this mentality of whether you want to call it in the zone or whatever it is, but...
Oh, I asked Mookie Betts about being in the zone, by the way.
That's
Would you like to read that?
No. It's you have that feeling of you can do no wrong, whether it's lefty, righty, fastball, curveball, whatever. And I think that is a very real thing. So, yeah, that is riding the hot hand. But I think that if you take a day off, it's not like you're going to lose that hot hand. Like, I think you're still going to feel that way if for one day off. I think that's okay. That's all right, especially in a baseball season where it's not like a football season where you're like you have to wait 7 days. For baseball season, the next opportunity is 2 days away.
So you believe in the hot hand, but you also think it's okay to rest the hot hand? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, it's. I think
how do those two coexist?
Because I just explained it to you, where I think that if you have a hot hand, if you have a hot hand for JD Martinez is an example of this, where if JD Martinez went 8-for-12 in the Angels series, 3 straight games, he gets the day off. Do I think that all of a sudden he's going to lose that feeling because he had a day off? I personally don't, because it's just one day. It's one day. If you're, I'll say it again, if you're talking about a football season, it's different. If you're talking about an extended period of time, it's different. Do I think Xander Bogaerts is going to jump back in and do exactly what he was doing before? No, because it's been a while. He doesn't have that same mindset. He doesn't have that same feeling of getting up there all the time. But I don't think you can just say, oh, the hot hand doesn't exist. No.
I don't know how you can say the hot hand exists and then be like, yeah, it's okay.
Because you can keep, in a nutshell, Evan, you can keep the hot hand over the course of 2 days. I mean, I've seen it happen, and we've seen it happen.
I don't know. It seems what like it's, to me, it feels like a little bit more of a one or the other. Either you believe in the hot hand or you don't.
Kerosene Ken, he said, Chris Sale, concern. How he's going to evolve this
base
year.
Running's still there.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to recap. You said JD Martinez playing too much in the field. Base running, I'm
Nunez.
Not too worked up over that. Where they could get worked, where they could run into some trouble with base running.
No pun intended.
If Hanley gets a little too enamored with this stealing bases thing. He went a couple times. And
what about just bad choices by a guy like Benintendi or somebody like that? I mean, there's a bunch of people who...
You know, I understand.
Keep seeing weird sends and head-scratching choices.
Yeah, but well, more so at the beginning of the year.
Yes, it has not been as bad lately.
So we'll see how that evolves. And then what was the other, you know, at the beginning I said, obviously, the top two guys in rotation. You can put Porcello in there, too.
Well, health is always.
So, yeah, but I just think.
The bullpen, right?
It's health. Health is different for those guys. And like, we saw their best hitter at the time exit, and they're still had a .350 batting average at shortstop. They'll be, even if they didn't, they probably would have been able to score enough runs to win. That is different. If you have something happen to those three guys or Craig Kimbrell, those are the guys to me where it can take a really, really bad turn.
The bullpen is the other one. That issue that existed at the very on the very first day of the season and over the offseason, this is not a second guess because Dave Dombrowski himself said he wanted a lefty reliever. He didn't go out and get it. And you and I and others, well, at least I know, I don't know about you, but certainly felt like Addison Reed needed to be replaced in some capacity. He was not. Tyler Thornburg might come back. Maybe he can be that guy. It's a lot of faith in somebody.
That would be a huge mistake to even think that. Because I think that's exactly what they did with Carson Smith. And
look at Carson Smith.
Well, yeah, look at him. It took him a while. They wanted Carson Smith to be that guy on day one, and clearly he wasn't. So he might evolve from that guy, and he should be allowed some leeway to get back into how he was in Seattle. He was back for less than a month last year. He jumps in this year, and you're just expecting, okay, be the guy you were in Seattle. Well, he wasn't ready. Maybe he evolves into that guy. It's fine. But I think to what you're saying, Evan, you can't just say you have the guy. You have the guys who have the potential to be the guy, but you don't have the guy right now.
Yeah, I think they knew that. I mean, I know they were trying to add some sort of relief help. They clearly are up against the 237 mark. I think it would have been a credit to them if they'd found a way to clear a little bit. I don't know how you do it. The roster's been playing so well. It's a little ridiculous in hindsight to say, but they knew they needed a reliever. They did not add one. That's kind of the bottom line there. And I'm sure it's not for lack of trying.
Well, ironically, you said going back to the GM meetings, they never said we needed a reliever, we need an eighth inning reliever. They said we need a lefty reliever.
They weren't talking about a loogie, though.
They definitively, Dave Dombrowski definitively said, this is what we
meant.
He
meant a lefty, either situational
lefty reliever.
Well, then that's a miss. And then I was giving Dombrowski too much credit because there's an underestimation of what he had in that bullpen.
But that's not, that's actually, ironically, hasn't been an issue.
I mean, because they're blowing people.
No,
podcast is about what could become an issue, right?
Sure, this podcast tries for facts and things that are actually happening. And all I'm saying,
what's the weakest part of this team right now?
You would
rotation,
have to say,
lineup, bullpen.
You would have to say setting him up to Kimbrell.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously.
But you're not. But I'm just trying to call you out on your inaccurate facts. Which is
a fact by nature is accurate. So
inaccurate.
It's not a fact if
it
is inaccurate.
Which is that lefty reliever. They were looking for a lefty reliever. They didn't get a lefty reliever. Lefty reliever is hurting them. Well, Bobby Pointer was really good, and Brian Johnson's been fine. That's not what's hurting them, Evan. I think we both agree that finding the guy eventually, because they're blowing everybody out. We haven't seen it, but finding the guy who was going to get to Kimbrell on a regular basis, not once in a while, not hit or miss, but on the regular basis, that's going to be important.
All right, so you misrepresented what I said. Yes, you did. I said Dombrowski acknowledge the need for a lefty reliever. I said, and I wrote, they need a lefty and a righty. They need somebody to replace Addison Reed.
When did you become this guy?
What are you talking about?
I heard this with Buck this morning, this guy who has to cite, I wrote this, I wrote that, and I wrote this.
Because people,
have a little more confidence in yourself. Just say it.
In this instance.
Just say it.
Rob, in this instance, it's very easy for someone, and it happens pretty frequently. Someone goes, oh, you're saying that now. You didn't say it before.
I'm so insecure.
I'm letting people know this is not a second guess. This is a first guess.
Do this. When you walk out of this room, be a little more secure in yourself.
Well, you just tried to misrepresent my point about the bullpen. So anyway, I was not saying that what I thought they needed was a lefty. I was saying that's what Dombrowski said, and to illustrate the point that they wanted a reliever, whatever the role might have been, and they didn't add anything. The role they wanted to add, as you put it, and I didn't quite realize, was situational. I thought they were looking for someone who was a lefty setup man who could get both sides. Whatever. I'm sure they would have been happy with either. Either way.
They also didn't know they had Bobby Pointer.
I've said, and I will continue to say, I promise that this team will be adding a reliever by July 31st.
I don't think that's a huge leap of faith.
Right, but that
they do it every
it's an
year.
Area. Look, at some point here, when this streak wears down, that's going to be one of the first areas you're going to see exposed again, unless somebody does really step up. Your Joe Kelly, Heath Hembry, by the way, has pitched very well. Let's give Heath Hembry some love. The heater's done great. The slider's got more depth to it. They figured out that this is another conversation I had in Anaheim. They figured out that sliders that move downward. Secure. The you want this is,
by the horizontal way, you are doing nothing. You are doing nothing to suggest that spending the money to send you to Anaheim was worth it. Anyway, go ahead. So finding the setup guy, I agree. They're going to have to find the setup guy. It always happens that time of year. It's always usually.
Yeah, but you could have done. You ideally don't wait until July to do it. But that's what they put themselves in.
Well, you have to when you get up against that payroll. When you have to get up against the 130 or 237. Then you have to say, this is what we're willing to spend money on. What did they overspend? Because you can't just say, we're going to go out and sign an $8 million reliever when Evan, you do think there are possibilities. At some point, there has to be a leap of faith. My problem with what Sure. they've done in the past is that their leap of faith have been like, Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, and the starting rotation. The leap of faith when you're saying we have these relievers and one of them can step forward, that's okay with me.
That's fine. I do think there's been a little too much acceptance of the idea that they're up against 237, okay? Could they have better distributed that 237 such that you had a little more certainty in the bullpen? But when you have the highest payroll in baseball, and again, this is where it's like, but you're arguing against a 17-3 team.
No, it's a fair argument. But tell me where you would have allocated the resources.
Now in hindsight, seeing how well these position players are playing, it's like, well, where do you do that? I don't know who you would have. Could you have gotten rid of Brock Holt's money and put that $2.5 million toward a reliever? Maybe. Right? Could you have gotten the 2.2? No, look, this is something I've pointed out before. People push back against it too. The thing I point to is creativity.
You're so insecure.
No. It's because I've had this argument with people about does Dave Dombrowski have creativity in how he goes about things? And one argument in his favor is that he added a guy in Chris Sale and Craig Kimbrell who was on team friendly contracts. But do they ever trade away money? Where's that deal that makes you go like, oh, whoa, I didn't see that coming. All right. And I guess Eduardo Nunez might be the one guy. That's somebody you're like, all right, that worked out really well. And nobody expected Nunez to hit 8 home runs after hitting 4 in the time with the Giants before they got him.
So if you're going to take Brock Holt's money, $2.5 million, to pay for a reliever.
You thought they should have made room for Edwin Encarnacion last year, right?
Yeah.
So that's a better argument than anything right now. It's harder right now to point it out because could you've gotten Moreland more cheaply had you waited?
Honestly, Evan, I was railing on the Encarnacion thing for a year and a half, and I think rightfully so. But the way that things fell, the way that they landed, which you get Mitch Moreland on like a ridiculously team-friendly contract.
It is team-friendly.
Well, no, I understand. It was a good contract for him. He got a better deal than Logan Morrison and Moustakas or whoever. But at the time, still, it is a team-friendly contract for what you thought you were going to have to pay for a guy like that. And then you get J.D. Martinez. And you get J.D. Martinez for what amounts to a 2-year deal. Which is, I think everybody wins in that situation, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, he did a good job with that.
And so if you're looking.
That's a bargain.
Yeah, so Encarnacion would have been 3 years at 60. So, you're getting JD Martinez, who is a better hitter than Encarnacion. You get him at basically the same rate for 2 years. All right, I can't say they were wrong in that. I can say they were wrong at the time. Last year they suffered. Absolutely they suffered. They would have won more games. They would have won more games when Encarnacion. Yeah. That was the move.
So it was a question that was more valid last year. Right now it's a little harder to point out and say, okay, this is what here's where they should have moved money. It's harder to do that.
So anything else that you think you could fall apart here?
We haven't. And generally speaking, we have not really seen adversity for this team yet. We haven't seen a media poop storm. We haven't seen criticism. We haven't seen negativity. And nor should they have any right now. And yet, here you are asking me on this podcast to bring negativity into their world. And we don't want to do that because we support the team.
Well, also,
we support the Red Sox.
I know you do. Also, you know, the Hanley situation is always, not to compare Hanley and Manny, but I remember 2008 covering that team. Manny was great. And then all of a sudden it flipped a switch because he had an option year and it became a mess. But it was like starting with the Jack McCormick thing in July 1st and just became a mess out of nowhere. And if Hanley, something happens to Hanley, he goes on the DL and this plate appearance thing gets dicey, or he's not producing, if he's not, goes back to what we were talking about before. If he's not producing, if he's one of these guys who's not producing, and then he has to sit more, I mean, that can get uncomfortable. Like Mitch Moreland doesn't produce, he doesn't play, it doesn't get uncomfortable. You know, maybe Mitch Moreland's upset, but whatever.
Everything right now works. There's no, these guys, everybody who's playing is doing well. So
my last question to you, Evan, is that do you think this is more along the lines of the 1984 Tigers or the 1987 Brewers?
In terms of a
1984
good start.
Tigers, they just dominated from the beginning and just cruised on through. Or 1987 Brewers, where things went awry.
This team is certainly this talented, but what you're seeing, the column I wrote the other day, please go to NBCSportsBoston.com and check it out, is that you go seasons without seeing a team play to its ability, right? Like I mean years can pass before where you have a team not on all cylinders. And what you're seeing from the Red Sox is what all cylinders look like. And it's very encouraging because it tells you, okay, we underestimated how good these guys could be. But at the same time, it's just so rare that everybody's doing this well. So individually, these talents are all there. It's going to be what else can you say, but it's going to get harder from here. Is there anything else I could possibly tell
you? Are they going to take a significant downturn?
What does that mean?
Okay, where you actually get in a race with other teams, where you are in
How far back are the Blue Jays?
What do you think?
They're close.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I know. So do you think that this is a team that's going to have a 5-game losing streak?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Do you think
1,000%.
Okay. Do you think that this is a team over a 2-month span is going to play 500?
Probably not.
Okay. So that's...
Unless health comes into it, probably not.
That's an elite team.
Yeah. Did they lose 5 in a row last year? I don't think they did, actually.
No. They hadn't lost...
But good teams can
lose
5 in a row.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the Astros did. And listen, we have plenty of examples with the Red Sox, good Red Sox teams going on terrible, terrible downturns. I think that when I look at this team... You should, if you're not looking at this with an eye toward a somewhat, I won't say collapse, but a significant downturn, then you're crazy because it just can't keep going the way it is.
It's physically impossible for a baseball
but,
team to do this.
But this is how I'll give them credit for this, is that I think, number one, I think they are, why they've been doing this, been managing people, hasn't been this just shock and awe of, we're going to throw these guys out every single day and ride, as we're talking about the hot hand. And also, I do think there are contingency plans and backup plans. We've already seen one with Nunez and Pedroia, that situation.
Good position player depth.
The Thornburg thing, we don't know how that's going to end up, but at least it's an option. It's a potential option to be had there. You have other guys, Bobby Pointer, you have other guys down there. You have depth starters you never thought would be in any conversation. Hector Velasquez, Jalen Beeks has started off unbelievable.
Oh, I believed in Hector Velasquez.
Okay, great.
I've been Hector Velasquez's biggest fan.
Great. That's super.
Let's go Hector.
Again. Don't get so defensive.
I'm just telling you how I feel.
Great. Well, he was awful in spring training.
So, well, that means a lot.
So you have backup plans, anything. I got to be honest with you. I'm just exhausted right now.
That's good radio, Rob.
No, I'm
thanks
excited
for having me.
I'm very energetic usually when I finish these things. You've exhausted
me. I have a way of doing that with people.
Yeah, how does it feel
I'm
to be
a quick
on
thinker?
How does it feel to, no, you're defensive. That's I said like 5 times, don't be so defensive. I don't know where you got when you got to this point of being so defensive about everything.
Probably on this radio station. Oh,
that is, you know what? You're probably right. What was it like being on the podcast? I'll use this one.
This was fun.
Good.
It's better, better than you trying to grill me on the overall organizational direction of what was then Comcast Sports at New England before I'd done a day there, which was the genesis of our first lost podcast.
Have you figured out what you're doing over there yet?
It's great. You were trying to bait me into saying, Rob, they told me that they want to be a radio station. That's what they told me in the interview, and I'm going there to be a radio host. Like, it was unbelievable what you were going for.
Have you figured out
day.
What you're doing over there yet?
You can't trick an interviewer into following some sort of, you know, I'm not going to follow your cookie crumbs the way one of your players will.
Like Hansel and Gretel?
like Craig Kimbrell in the 20-minute podcast to get to one question.
To what do you make of The Athletic?
I think they're doing well. I hope they do well.
It's not the answer. What do you mean? 3 years from now, do you think they're going to be around?
So, all right. I'll give you the honest answer. I'm going to give you the honest answer with this.
Yeah, yeah. I'm honestly...
When people... Look, a lot of my friends have ended up... A lot of your friends have ended up there. And I talk to people about... you ask questions about the business plan. You and I, and anybody... And I would wager any of our friends in this industry are not in that business world to have a real understanding of the viability of this operation. There's no question you and I could ask those CEOs or, you know, the top editors there that would make us say, oh, okay, I know this is going to work, because nobody knows if it's going to work. So you just can't, everyone is taking a leap of faith. Every single person there. And I'm encouraged, because it does seem like, look, the roster's impressive. If this amount of money doesn't work, what works? So all I'm doing is hoping that it does work for the sake of the industry. There's nothing, you and I are not equipped to evaluate this on a deep level outside of generalities, right? We don't understand
I think
venture capital. We don't, this is not our stuff.
No, but I don't begrudge him for doing this at all. And I don't know.
Who would begrudge?
There's
no begrudging.
No, there's no begrudging.
No begrudging.
All right, Seinfeld. So I find this stuff interesting, and I hope it does work out, because these people, they are friends of ours, and it's another great place for people to land with jobs, and everyone's trying to figure this out. Boston Sports Journal, same way. It's a subscription model.
I'm going to be really honest with you.
Yeah.
That Mookie Betts story I did in Oakland, in Anaheim, the story I did recently on Jared Banner, Red Sox front office person, I miss writing... That stuff might still be the most enjoyable part of my job.
Did you do that?
In-depth stories.
Did you do that? And this is a very serious question.
Yes.
Did you find yourself looking to do those stories, which I'm like, why are you writing those stories? But did you look to do those stories because you see what The Athletic's doing and saying,
we have to pivot over there? No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all, because I've never stopped writing those stories, but it is related to The Athletic in so much as that seems to be what they are. They're still doing daily coverage, and it's also varying very much city to city, writer to writer. But it is a sole focus there, whereas I, at NBC Sports Boston, do TV, I do radio with you, Rob, at WEI, and I also write those stories. But there is a part of me, at least lately, that's like, man, I do... It's enjoyable when that is a focus.
Of course it is. Yeah. There's Evan, I've always said this.
I like that stuff. Not everybody likes that stuff. No. Kirk Manahan doesn't like that stuff.
No,
Kirk Manahan can kick rocks.
It's different. It's apples and oranges. It's like you're talking about...
But you could do it all, too.
Hold on. Yes.
And you do it all. Every once in a while you have a good feature.
Hold on. What you do, there's no feeling. There's no better feeling. If you're having a crappy day, you can do radio. You can do TV. You're never going to get the satisfaction you're going to get from actually writing a good story, even if you present it the wrong way, like you did. But if you take the time to do a good story, there's no better satisfaction. I don't know in the business world if that makes a difference, but in terms of our own mindset, I totally understand. I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah. We're still doing good stories at our respective outlets. You do it at MEI, I do it at NBC Sports Boston. There's something... You and I came up as writers. We didn't come up as TV or radio people. So I think there's still that default position of that's what we enjoy the most.
But you know what? I also... If you flip that around, I also get frustrated, too, with the writers who say... Oh, well, how can you do that? Or how can you do that? Or this is talk radio, or this is, or, you know, for lack of a better example, Barstool, or this. Like, it's all the, dude, you got to.
The wall's broken.
You have to accept all of it. You have to accept all of it. And we've talked about this on the radio, I think. Was you gave me crap for like Joe Kelly's son saying Brad Fuchow. This is entertainment. Like you have to get a people to read your Jared Banner story. You have to get them in the door to read it. And a lot of that is finding the entertaining way to do that.
All right, you're right. Look, I don't think there's anything wrong. I had a discussion with a prominent national writer in a different sport. I guess this was last year, and I wanted to punch the guy in the. I want to punch the guy in the fucking face because he was basically saying, you know, well, we were talking about can one be a personality and also be a good reporter, and you know, he was casting his downward big outlet national eye on the idea you could. And I do. We were brought up thinking you could not. That you're either a reporter or a columnist, and I actually talked about this on a podcast with the prominent sports media guy the other day, Brian Moritz, who I worked with in Binghamton, New York.
Who doesn't know him?
Who doesn't know Brian Moritz? He's a professor at Newhouse, Syracuse. But this idea that if you're a strict reporter with a reporter hat on, you're not everything is analysis. Everything is in some way a form of editorializing. Some of it is more easily identifiable. But this notion that someone out there, if you're writing straight fact, you're writing literally, he grounds it out to second base. And even now in the shift, that could be an argument about where do you actually
you know as well as I do where that comes from, where you have people
the old
like
school.
It's also their. We're going to keep digging in on this and screw everybody else for if they don't like it. It's the, I'm going to write this story and everyone come read it because it's an awesome story, which is, and you know as well as I do, there's a lot of writers who still don't get that. You can't do that anymore. You have to go out and reach out and get the people to read it. You aren't, unless you're at an enormous, enormous outlet, even then, you can't just do something and say, hey, I wrote this. Isn't it awesome? It's 3,000 words, but you still, even though I didn't break it up at all, you're going to read through the whole thing. And you know what? You shouldn't give an opinion in any of it. You know as well as I do, there are still people out there who are saying, like the guy that you talked to, they're dug in on this. And you know who those people are going to be? Those are going to be the unemployed people eventually. And we've already seen this. Have we not? Because what people are prioritizing up until The Athletic happened was people who could do a lot of different things, right?
But The Athletic, my guess is you're going to see The Athletic, if not go into video, they'll do podcasts. I think they want people, like, even The Athletic, if you write a good feature, they want good analysis, and then tell me where the line is between analysis and a column.
With what?
There are columnists who write opinion pieces, right?
Yes.
And then there are beat writers who write analysis pieces. What's the difference between an analysis piece and an opinion piece? Where's the line? It's ambiguous at best.
Well, it depends. If it gets too wonky in an analysis piece, it depends how you present it. So that's what I'm talking about. You have to present it the right way.
But and here's the other thing. Do our listeners even understand these? How many times do you hear somebody say, oh, I like Dan Shaughnessy on the Red Sox beat? He's not a beat writer. These distinctions, these are... And I'll reference Brian Moritz again, this guy I did the podcast with, who I used to work with, who is into sports media now. Like that's what he does, his job. It is a construct, right? It is a social construct. I sound like every college kid now. Everything you see in this world is a social construct. The idea of what a beat writer does or what analysis is or any of these things.
Well, you know, it goes back to he's a blogger or he's a no, it's everything. And it's what you tell.
Credibility still matters,
of course. Well, that's the thing that's never going to change.
Here's the only thing.
You would hope it would never change. It has changed.
When you and I put ourselves out there in almost very personal ways, right? Like when I do the radio and we talk about what's going on outside of it, and maybe I do this a little bit more than you, but you are opening yourself up to criticism. Whereas if you are in that strict line of traditional beat reporting, you're almost a little more free from reproach. It's just like nobody knows anything about you, so there's no criticism, therefore, of you, and the story just stands.
But Evan, again, this is about when you tell kids, you say, you got to separate yourself, right? You have to separate yourself. And if you stick to that straight line of the people you're talking about, of not being willing to put yourself out there, of not being willing to market yourself a little bit, of getting a little looser in the way that you're writing, then you're not going to separate.
But different jobs still exist.
Well, you're not going to separate yourself. And that's what these people have to understand. And Scott Lauber left the ESPN. He just recently left ESPN, one of the last ESPN local sites. When ESPN was hiring for that site, like they said, well, we want someone to do this, the TV and the radio and
but that's ESPN.
Snapchat and whatever. Well, they end up not doing any of it, really. I mean, really, Scott didn't do a whole lot of it.
He was mostly writing.
He did a great job with it. But it sort of strikes me as that's an organization that said, yeah, we know we should do that stuff, but we don't really know how. And we, more importantly, we don't feel comfortable branching too far out. Isn't this what happened to ESPN, where they knew that they should show personality, but they knew it too late. They got Al Duncan too late in the
personality,
game.
Personality, just, but just to draw a line here, you talk about you and I think still when we report a story, unless you're like, you know, blinded by Pedroia or something like that, we still adhere to some sort of internal compass that we've long had toward objectivity. Like, you know, if there's a player, I don't like that guy, he gives me a bad quote. I think you are still able to manage that in your own head and say, all right, I'm not going to unfairly criticize this guy just because he gives me a bad quote. Not all media members can do that. But you know what I mean? There's a difference between letting your personality out and letting little potential biases that I guess everyone somewhat naturally has influence the work. Right? Those are two different things.
Yeah, but I think that's where people really get confused, or people misrepresent that. Like, and when I say people, like the holier-than-thou organizations, they misrepresent that. I think that you go into a clubhouse, you should treat people like human beings. You can talk to a person. You can have a conversation. And with the understanding, I can do a podcast with these guys at Twin Peaks Restaurant, but with the understanding that if shit goes the other way, you're going to report on it. That is the reality of life in the media right now. It can't be.
Where the difference lies is the gray area. There are stories and details that come up where it's like, okay, I'm closer with this guy. Would I write? You know, is this necessary? If there's something that has to be written, I have no doubt you'll write it, right? But if there's somebody you're close, it's human. You're less inclined to write something is optional.
No, it all comes down to the importance of the story. Should that story? Right. Should that information? Does that information have to get out there?
A lot of it is maybes, though, Rob.
Sure, but and also in baseball, it gets a little more convoluted than other places too. The season's longer, the access is more, you have to say, hey, and I've done this, I remember, here's an example. I don't remember what year it was, Ortiz messed up his knee. They were saying that he had a bad quad, and he had messed up his knee, caught up in the netting. And so I'm asking, he let it slip out, it was his knee. And then he's like, I'm walking away, he's like, but don't write that. I'm like, well, okay, well, what am I supposed to do now? He's still, don't write that. So this is, it seems to be a big deal. So now you're thinking, well, he told me not to write that. It's an off-the-record thing. What do you do? A lot of times you find
out. It's a tough situation.
You find out other avenues to go.
But even if you go write it,
no. So this is what. So this is what happened. I didn't write. Yeah, exactly. That's what you're paranoid. And sometimes, been in this situation too, where you have to go up to him and say, "Listen, I got to write this because it's going to get written." And so, but in this case, don't write. All right. Well, now you're looking for the opening. You're looking for any opening, and maybe you go up to him a different way. Hey, is it all right? Because you know sometimes guys change their mind. What happened was that Gammons heading at the All-Star break had said that David Ortiz might have to have surgery. And what they were saying was a quad. Like, you don't surgery on your quad? That doesn't make any sense. So I was at 2007 because I was with Silverman at the Herald. I call up Mike Silverman, who was out of the All-Star, ask him about this. And sure enough, he's in the mood. He says it was his knee. And that's usually how it works. So for these people to say, why didn't you report it right then and there? That, a lot of times that's not how it works.
You're right.
Yeah,
and we go through this all the time. I've gone through it recently. I mean, it happens.
Yes, it happens. Anyway, all right, we might break that up into two. Who knows? All right, I gotta go.
Me too.
All right, bye.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.